welcome to University Matters on Campus FM. I'm Patricia Camilleri. In this series, I will be talking to academic staff about their research, their international networks, their aims and plans for the future. I shall also be hearing from staff and students about the many events that take place here at the University of Malta. This is the programme that keeps you informed about what's happening on campus. I'm very happy to have with me in the studio today on University Matters, Mr. Matthew Scurfield, and with him there is Ms. Annabel Mifsud, who is a research officer at the Department of Counselling, Faculty of Social Wellbeing, which has just recently been launched. So I'm enjoying having a few people from this new faculty. It's very exciting. Just a word about our main guest, shall we say, Matthew Scurfield. Normally, I read a sort of potted biography of my guests, but I came across something which Matthew Scurfield had written about himself, and I thought it well expresses where he sort of comes from, in inverted commas. So I thought I'd read that out instead of the usual potted biography. He says, "I was born and brought up in post-war Cambridge in the UK to an academic, some might say bohemian family, on the posh side of the tracks, with all the dons, case studies, PhDs and endless expertise. However, I was a miserable classroom failure at a time when the word dyslexia didn't pull any weight. I believe now that the combination of my background and this education, or lack of it, gave me a unique handle on the tool of knowledge and how it is so often the perpetrator of a deep and cantankerous divide." I should say as well, of course, that Mr. Scurfield is a writer. He practices yoga, has had a distinguished career on the English stage, working for Shakespeare's Globe Theatre, Complicit, Royal National Theatre, English National Opera, The Mermaid Theatre, lovely memory of mine, The Mermaid Theatre, the ICA, the Royal Court, and many others. He also has a string of TV and film credits to his name. Today, Matthew Scurfield is here to talk about living with dyslexia, which is a one-hour performance and a discussion, which will be followed by a discussion, which is happening here, and Annabel will give us the details a little later. Welcome to you both. With that biography, I think we need to hear a little bit more about your childhood and some of the challenges you had to face in the classroom.
Yes, there's a huge irony for me coming to a university campus and talking about this stuff, because I just felt the moment I left school that would be the end for me, that I would never end up in a place of learning like this. So for me, that is an irony, and a very good one as well, a very poignant one. Dyslexia, as I say, wasn't something, it's not a big deal for me. I don't see it as, I'm not saying that it was easy. It wasn't easy by any means. In fact, it was horrendous going through the whole school system and all the rest of it. But that's another story in a way. It's how one survives, and it's how the way in which one survives, and the creativity that comes to mind when I look back and I think, God, how did I survive? Well, I was a very creative person. I used my wit and my imagination to get through, to wrangle my way through, if you like, and discovered, like a lot of us did, especially then, by being the classroom clown and by being the school idiot, you could get away with an awful lot. Well, that's one way of doing it, but I'm not now advocating that is a way, because I think it's cruel. I'm not feeling sorry for myself, I just think it's cruel to put any child through that, anything like that, and I wouldn't want that. Wish that on anyone. So for me, it's about how, why, and being engaged in learning, and how to how to regain an interest when one's lost an interest, if you like. And that's what my life's been about. That's why acting, in a way, the theatre, I was very fortunate to have parents who encouraged me to be an actor, because without that encouragement, I definitely would have ended up being a heroin addict or somebody who a burden on society, and I probably wouldn't even be here now. There's no question about that. So acting, theatre, it saved my life. There's no question about that, because it's, for me, meeting actors, especially, and directors who are more at home with these words, which one is loath to use, like intuition, emotion. We talk about emotion, and people go, oh my God, is an emotional person.
Especially in the UK, they would do that. Yes, in the Mediterranean, yeah. It's a little bit more open to emotion.
Yes, well, that's what's good. That's what I like about mold. That's what I like about living here, is because that they wear their heart on the sleeve. Again, that's shortchanging it. But I think, that especially in Gozo, a lot of men that I meet, they're much more open about their learning difficulties and their of different ways of doing things, and they don't carry that shame, that weight of shame, and emotions are a much easier channel, if you like. In the UK, we talk about being qualified all the time, and that, I'm not saying that you don't, because obviously when you phone up a plumber or you go and see the doctor, you want the best and you want the most qualified. So I'm not saying that no one should be qualified, but what I'm saying is there's a whole area that we're very much in danger of cutting off. And I certainly felt and still feel cut out of the status quo. I don't feel like I belong here in this university. And I know that if I was to go through the proper channels, as it were, I wouldn't get in. I just wouldn't get in. They wouldn't give me a place. I mean, I could probably bullshit my way in, but I wouldn't get in on paper. There's just no way. And I think it's still the same. And I think, well, why would an intelligent person, I'm not incredibly intelligent in that way, but I am intelligent enough. And why would I be excluded still? Why is it like that? And I think that's a very fundamental and important question. How do you engage a kid's interest? That's what we should be talking about. Not how are you going to pass the test, Billy? Not how do we engage Billy's interest? What is it about our faculty? What is it about our whole way of doing academia to make it interesting? And that's what I hope this performance does. It's a way of bringing theatre and academia together, joining them, welding them together, and saying yes, they do exist, but you have to have it in both hands. You can't just say, well, we'll do a little bit of theatre. You know, theatre's, it's as important as psychology, is as important as science, and they are, in fact, art and science. I mean, I don't see any difference between science and theatre and theatre and science. There are everything that's involved, the science of emotion, the science, the way in which we exist, the way in which we do or don't do something, the way we, is all, it's like a science. What propels us towards destruction, self-destruction, and low self-esteem, what propels us towards feeling good about ourselves, feeling okay, and being able to say, listen to the teacher, I'm sorry, but I can't spell this word, can you help me? Now, 10 years ago, I would have felt utterly ashamed, totally embarrassed, and utterly ashamed to even say anything like that. And I think that's the issue here, not whether or not you can spell is for me, in my mind, is irrelevant. So, but all these things come up in this performance, and all these things are, this is what we're exploring here and want to bring out, and hopefully in a very entertaining way.
Before we go into a little bit more detail about this performance, which has the same name as your book, I Could Be Anyone.
Yes.
I think it's an interesting discussion, the business of the system, the education system, because reading a paragraph from I think this is your latest publication, a more recent publication.
Yes, in fact, I worked with Carmel Borges on this. Yes, yeah.
Going back to when you went to school, you said we were streamed according to our place on the ladder.
Yes.
A being the top rung and the bottom D. Mm. I started my first term in a class below D, called removed. The old habits dying proverbially hard. Mm. I think parents very often actually want this measurement. Are we going to have to sort of change the way we look at how we educate our children rather radically?
I think we are, yes. I think it's very easy to say all this stuff because obviously you have to keep, as Lerner keeps saying it, and it's like in the performance, you have to keep bringing it back to what does it do to you? Because if you start to become too generalized, it becomes another lecture about or another opinion about education, whereas if you make it a personal, and that's not that one wants to feel sorry for oneself, but I think that it's very important to bring it back to how is it for you. Now obviously you excelled, as you were saying. I didn't. And I think there are obviously going to be kids today who are actually in the same situation. Some excel in it and some don't.
Well, I excelled in reading, I might say, yes. Not necessarily in everything else.
No. But I think that that what we were saying earlier, the education system, as it were, was set up in the UK as we know it now. The kind of root of it was set up in the Industrial Revolution for white-collar workers and blue-collar workers. We want children to be fit the work marketplace, and we talk about this all the time. How can we engage the corporations in our to get them to put money in? Now I think we have to start to take responsibility. Now again, this is very easy for me to say. I'm an outsider. I've had my life, if you like. I've lived it and I've come through scathed but unscathed. I'm very, very lucky to be, as I said earlier, to be alive. And I'm not, thankfully, having to go through what a lot of kids would have to go through today, which is carrying this burden, which is what I see it, for their mums and dads, and subsequently for the teachers and for everyone else, and for them, for the school, then for the university that they go to, that they've passed. And I'm not advocating, again, we mustn't get this wrong, that we want the best. You know, when we phone up a doctor, we want the best doctor, we want the best lawyer, which we want. So all that side of it, and for those who can do it. But I think we're missing out. We're casting aside a very intuitive side of ourselves, a creative side of ourselves. And those words, again, like emotion, if we use the word intellect and we start to use the word science, then everyone kind of goes, oh, yeah, and they take interest. But as soon as you start to say emotions and intuition and creativity,
people not start, measurable.
Yes, they start to go, oh, no, not that. We can't be general. But I think that's what's the lacking. That's what I feel I need from a very personal point of view. Is I need an intuitive way of learning, a space where it's intuitive, a more creative way of tackling a classroom problem, if you want to call it a problem. Or
tell us a bit about how you met up with theatre and how theatre sort of in a way liberated you and made such a difference in your life.
Well, I think it's like a lot of actors, and this is always a bit boring, but you get where you just, there's nothing else you can do. I mean, any job, and this is how bad my dyslexia was, I'd get fired from after a few hours a week. I mean, they're talking about simple jobs like working in a supermarket. I mean, I'd get so excited and then screw it up. And then 5 minutes later, I'd be out on the street again. And theatre was the only thing where I seemed to be able to at least fit in some way. And I started behind stage. I mean, in those days, you see, again, is one of the things that was fantastic when I was growing up, was that there was, like, every town had two, if not three, theatres, and a theatre company, and they called it repertory, and it was a professional place, and you could go there if you were lucky, and you could get a job. And that doesn't happen anymore. I mean, now you go to drama school, if you're lucky, you get a part in EastEnders, you know, and it's very limiting. I mean, there are still doorways, and there are still openings for actors, but it's much, much harder.
There isn't as much rep as there used to be.
It's
a funding issue? Or?
No, there's no. Well, it's all funding, and it's terrible. I mean, there isn't any interest in theatre. I mean, television has become, I mean, that's the medium now, really. Television is like the old rep. It's a strange medium, because I think it stops actors being theatrical, for want of a better word. And I think there's something good about magnifying who we are, you know, blowing. When I say magnifying, I mean psychologically magnifying, and that's what theatre can do. It's like putting our little lives under a microscope, and it makes them look, wow, that person's, you know, they may look sweet, but they're actually a psycho, you know, and all those kind of things that you, these insights, that's what theatre helps for us to evolve, helps us to see. And
you wrote your book.
Prattling on a bit here, sorry.
You wrote your book, I Could Be Anyone.
Yeah. That's a double thing, isn't it? I Could Be Anyone is like an actor saying, okay, yeah, throw any role, I'll do any role. But it's not that. The book is actually about it could be anyone. It could be, I'm lucky, as I said earlier. A lot of my friends became junkies, have ended up not being here. They didn't have a chance. And I would say I speak a lot for them as well, you know, that they were outsiders right from the beginning. They failed the 11 plus, as we called it then. I mean, you've only just got rid of the 11 plus here, haven't you? That's the way. Don't hang around under the shadow of the British Empire. You know, you'll get burnt. You know, I think that it was, you know, it's a terrible thing to put a child through at 11 years old.
The book is described on the web anyway as alternatively contemplative and raucous.
Yes,
I like that. I love that description. Do you think that fits the description?
Yes, I think that. Yeah, hopefully. I think it's probably a bit too. You know, looking back on it now, it's probably far too long and needs much more ruthless editing. But I would say that a lot of my life has that being dyslexic in a non when before the word existed kind of thing enabled me to take steps. I mean, when you've been told this is like day after day after day, hour after hour, not you, Schofield, you're a failure, you're good for nothing, not you, out, not you. After a while, you kind of go, okay, not me, what have I got to lose? I'll take this step. So you start to take steps, and I experimented. I dared to go to areas. I mean, I went to, when I was 16, going on for 17, I went to a place called Barrow-in-Furness. Now, Barrow-in-Furness, in terms of where I was brought up in Cambridge, I was brought up, you must understand, very middle class, sweet little bed, you know, my own food whenever I wanted it. We were very, very lucky. We were very, very, very lucky. But for some reason, I ended up in Barrow-in-Furness, where they used to make the submarines. I mean, this was like 100 miles away from anything I'd ever known in my life. And how I dared to go there and be on my own and go and get a job in the theatre there, looking back, I have no idea. But I'm pretty sure that it was because I just felt, I've got nothing, absolutely nothing in my life, and therefore nothing to lose. And I think that I gained that strength through whatever it was I was put through. And I think that's a very positive way of looking at it. Now, I'm not advocating that anyone should go through what I went through.
I love the one of the reviewers says, I found it to be an outstanding, absorbing and compelling read. Mm. As Matthew looks back thoughtfully over his most colourful life, we learn a great deal about growing up in a confusing world, the difficulties of living with dyslexia, teaching yoga and the acting profession. I really recommend this book.
Yes.
So I recommend this book to the listeners. Mm. And how do you translate that written word into the performance that you're going to be doing shortly?
Well, this is a very interesting, and I think it's an important question, because it joins up with this thing of ethnography and performance. Why theatre, and why are we here with the psychology department? It's not called that anymore, is it? It's the
Department
of Counselling. Well, that's a very interesting and good question, in that writing was something I'd started to do because I had all these thoughts in my head and they were going round and round and round, and gradually I realised, as dyslexia became a more fashionable word to use and more actors were starting to be the younger actors in companies I was working with, so I'd become more open about being dyslexic. I decided when I was about 50 years old to go and get myself tested. I thought, yes, this has got to be something here. And lo and behold, I was profoundly dyslexic. It was the first test I passed, so that was like a fantastic celebration. And I started using this, discovering the computer. When I got the computer, what we call the personal computer, I took the computer to bits, which is what I always did. I did it with my first bicycle, which is a very common thing with dyslexics. I didn't want to just be at the mercy of this box or this machine that was in front of me. I wanted to know what it was, how it worked. So first of all, the first thing I did when we first got... we were lucky to be able to get one for our son, was that I took it apart. This was in the 80s, I think, to see what it was. And you discover, oh, yeah, that's the hard drive, that's the sound card, that's the motherboard, that's where you put that with that, and that makes that work. Then you introduce this thing called software, which goes with the hardware, and so on. And then in doing that, I discovered this voice recognition. And in discovering voice recognition was software. It was very backward then. It was very awkward, and it was maybe 70% successful. But it was a revelation. It enabled me to start to speak into a microphone, and the words would literally come up in front of me, so I could see words clearly. When I wrote down, it was very hard for me afterwards, 5 minutes afterwards, to say, well, what does that mean? I couldn't even decipher my own writing. So this was a way, this was a beginning for me, a huge beginning. And as the years have gone by, the whole thing with computer recognition has got better and better. And in fact, now it is absolutely unbelievably good. I mean, it's 90, you're talking about 98-99% accuracy. So there is actually no excuse now for getting things written down. So what happened was that I started to write down a lot of my experiences, and having them clearly on the page, I think, right, did that really happen? Was it really like that? And what does that mean exactly? So it enabled me to put these thoughts, which were reflections on what had been, if you like, in, so that they became clearer and clearer, and start to make actual sense. Now, out of that grew this need to act it out, perform it. And so, and when I started to read to people, like my wife Lena or my sisters or whoever I could get to listen, I've started to realise, yeah, it's much easier to do this when I'm performing than it is when I'm actually sitting in an office. And so that's how the performance grew out of it. So it grew out of, if you like, these readings of different drafts, then book readings, and then gradually it became like a performance. And the funny thing, the most amazing thing for me is that these have been huge stepping stones all the way along. And like meeting Clara Juice, for instance. She interviewed me for her television program a few years back now, 2008, I think it was, about the book and about... and we were started talking. We had a lot of very... we all got on, the three of us, Lena, Claire and I, got on tremendously. And we all have lots of the same interests, yoga being one of the main things. And I kind of thought, well, what have I got to lose? How would you feel, Claire, if we did this as a proper piece of theatre, this interview thing, and we set it up so that we have... Anyway, that's how that grew. And that was another huge... stepping stone. And one of the brilliant things about Claire is she's an extremely good and subtle actress, and she has been enabled, because what we do in this performance is we take on a reality that is hopefully takes the audience along with them, so the audience are sharing a reality which becomes very hot, Mediterranean hot, like an argument, if you like, and in that area, the audience start to become more engaged, and because it's so real, because Claire's so clever, and because together we think we can make it so real, the audience join in, and in joining in, they start to expose their own realities. I don't want to give too much away.
Anybody who wants to find out more will have to come to the performance.
It's certainly not Annabelle boring, put it that way.
If Annabelle can tell us just the basic details, how people get to us. And,
The performance is going to be held next Friday on the 22nd of February at 7:30 at the University Chaplaincy. Those interested, need to book their tickets beforehand. There's limited space. And ideally, they would contact the Department of Counselling on this telephone number. It's 2340-3518. Alternatively, they can send us an email on either Sheena, Sheena, @um.edu.mt, or else on my personal email, Annabelle, Annabelle.mifsud@um.edu.mt.
Well, thank you both very, very much. Thank you, Matthew Schofield, and thank you, Annabelle, for coming to talk to us about this performance. Thank you for being with us on University Matters. You can listen to any of the previous interviews in this series on the Campus FM website. I hope you'll join us again next week. This is Patricia Camilleri saying goodbye.